Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Welcome back to the show. All right, the AFC is and the NFC, the NFL have named their players of the week. Which Chiefs player would you give AFC offensive player of the week to?
Kareem Hunt.
Jake?
K. Hunt.
I would have given it to Kareem Hunt. It goes to Alex Smith.
That's a fine choice, too.
I like it when you can't figure out which Chiefs player should be AFC Offensive Player of the Week. I like the way that happens.
Yeah. I mean, Kareem Hunt set records, but I guess Alex Smith is the number one rated passer. Is he the number one rated passer? Yeah, he is.
Okay, let's see if Mr. Man has
led
his thinking cap on.
Led the league in passing yards in week one?
Who would you give NFC Offensive Player of the Week to? Well, look at him. Look at the
Matthew Stafford.
Nope.
Sam Bradford.
Yep. Yes. Did you see who, right on cue, right in front of the cameras, who gave Sam Bradford a warm embrace as he was on the field? And the, you know, and clearly the cameras had gone out there to see Sam Bradford.
AP.
Heck of a game for Sam Bradford. And, you know, what a way. And here comes someone up there, just hugs him up, starts talking. Man knows where the cameras are better than who
Chase Daniel.
Yeah, that's right. Right there. Chase Daniel, just right in there.
Yeah. Well, he knows Sam Bradford.
Sure. Do you know Rustin Dodd?
I do. And I've been listening to The War on Drugs for the past week because of his recommendation.
It's good.
Rustin Dodd, did you go see Beck and U2 last night?
I did not. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about it, and I enjoy U2. I mean, they're one of the maybe the best, you know, like stadium rock bands of the last three or four decades or whatever that would be. But I don't know. I was out at the ballpark at like 9 o'clock or 9 a.m.
You had enough,
or a little after 9 a.m. And I just felt like, I didn't know if I wanted to hang around the Truman Sports Complex for a full 14 or 15 hours. It just seemed kind of excessive.
You know, I enjoy you too, Rustin. Whenever you come on the show, I enjoy you. What about Beck? You didn't say anything about Beck. That's why Nate went. Nate loves Beck, even though people talking to him refuse to let him watch Beck. Are you a fan of Beck?
I guess so. I kind of feel like, I don't know what being a fan of Beck is. Like, he's had so many different sounds and like changes in his career. You know, there was like the early 90s Beck, which was sort of enjoyable, and then he kind of had that mid 2000s thing where he had that album Sea Change, which was really popular or like well thought of, but it's kind of just softer and stuff. I don't know, it's just like I'm not sure what he's got. I was listening to his stuff from his new album too. But I mean, I enjoy him, but he's just sort of hard to place for me in terms of what it means to like Beck.
Sea Change was deep and mellow.
That's what I liked about him,
and I enjoyed it.
Morning Phase is a hard album to like. Somebody's asking me to just, well, is it a country album? Is it a folk album? It's like mystic folk or something. I don't even know how I would describe it, but that's what I appreciate so much about Beck. You know, there's a lot of bands that crank out an album, one album after another, that sounds the same. And he has amazingly explored a lot of different types of music and feels to his albums. And he's been pretty good at all of them as far as I'm concerned. You know, that's why I like him so much.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, you think of Beck as being like this sort of young upstart, you know, guy in his like late 20s or 30s, and now he's probably been around for like 25 years or not, maybe not that long, but he's like pushing that, which is strange. You think of him as being as sort of like the young guy kind of pushing the norms, and now well, I mean, how long ago did like Where It's At come out? I mean, that was probably like 1996 seven or eight or something like that.
I was telling
that was his second album.
I was telling the boys. I saw Beck at Memorial Hall back in '96, and it was awesome.
Oh, I remember my freshman year in high school. Mellow Gold was his first album, right? That had to be '94. So,
I mean, I remember Rolling Stone magazine wrote some piece and claimed that the song "Loser" was the most significant song of Generation X. And they had this whole thing about how
I don't know what that. I don't
even
that
know
means.
What that. I mean, you know, it's the kind of thing. That
who's Generation X?
People that we're Generation.
Are we?
X. Yeah, no, we're Gen Xers, man.
Not me.
Yeah, you are.
No,
you can
no
deny
way.
It all you
Bet
want,
you
bro.
Are.
But
I'm
you
not.
I
can promise you that I'm. Not.
I will graciously accept it. I don't want to
so
be anything.
There's so many things about us that make us Generation X too. The whole latchkey kid generation. That
What's
was us.
That wasn't me.
You weren't a latchkey kid. I certainly was.
What's latchkey kid?
You don't know that phase? You were probably a latchkey kid.
Well, explain it to people.
Well, latchkey kids a lot of times were the kids who either were in a dual income home or a single income home, like divorced parents. So
right.
we walked home from school and let ourselves into the house.
Yeah.
Latchkey. We didn't have babysitters. We just walked to and we came home from school and we.
My mama didn't let me walk nowhere.
Okay.
I was a latchkey kid.
Yeah. So
I went to school like far away. I couldn't walk there.
Yeah, but
you expect me to walk on I-29 to school?
Nope.
Yeah, there
the hell is wrong
several
with
years
you?
Of my childhood.
I walked
where
down 95th Street to school.
Yeah, walked home from school, and I knew what phone number to reach my mom at work.
I never learned that.
That was Generation X, and there was you know the whole their idea was that the song "Loser" embodied our attitudes at that time.
Rustin, I'm sorry for this. I don't know what the hell's going on. Really, I apologize for all of this.
Whenever you can discuss generations and
what generation are you, by the way?
You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I technically am a millennial, but that term doesn't even really mean anything to me anymore.
Because right.
Back when I was a kid, I was Generation Y.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But then I feel like half of Generation Y, people that were born from like early 80s on to like the late 80s were just folding into the millennial generation. But I don't really feel like I feel like I have more in common with people like in their mid-30s than I would with somebody who's like in their early 20s who are still considered millennials, I think. I don't know.
See, Nate was Generation X. I was D-Generation X.
Oh yeah.
See what I'm saying? That's the difference. People
I
like the show because you and Nate are different. This is how we're different. This is me.
I want to be part of that generation.
You think no latchkey kids around here.
Right, that's
no.
right. I was thrusting my pelvis at anyone who would look.
Bow to the man.
And I'm still into this thing.
Yeah.
Break it down. Yeah.
I just did it again. Yes, he did.
Oh, Rustin, I bet you wish you were in studio right now.
How about those Royals, huh?
Right. Rustin, before you know the Royals, I don't know, like, so what is your reaction when you see that the Cleveland Indians have won 20 in a row?
Well, I mean, I think it's impressive when you just look at their numbers in terms of what their earned run average has been over that span and the runs they've scored. I think they've outscored. This is just like a guess or something. You probably have the number in front of you, but it's like they've outscored opponents like 160 to like 30 in that like 20 games. I mean, they've just been routing teams on a regular basis. To me, this sort of goes hand in hand with that, but I'm equally just dumbfounded by the Dodgers right now and the Indians in terms of, I mean, you have a team that's probably going to win 100 games or could, and the Dodgers who've managed to lose 11 in a row, I guess. And then you have the Indians who are putting together a 20-game winning streak, which, you know, the fourth one in the last 100 years. You know, these kind of streaks, just like, you're not supposed to happen in baseball. It's just not, you know, is it just random flukiness of this season? I suppose that's probably part of it. But, and you also, I think the postseason sets up is really being fascinating because, you know, at one time or another this year, the Astros were the so-called super team back in, you know, April and May, if you can remember that, and into June. And then the Dodgers went on their run, and also they were the greatest team of all time. And now you have the Indians who are doing something that, you know, few teams have ever done and are right there in terms of having the best record in baseball. So I'm not sure who, you know, the favorite is in the postseason. So I think it will be kind of fascinating to see those those teams kind of go at it, you know, in October.
Hi, Rustin. Let's talk about these Kansas City Royals and who, if Eric Skoglund can't get deep into this afternoon's game, who can pitch in this bullpen right now?
That's a really good question, Nate, because Ned Yost, he had sort of an odd feel to his post-game press conference yesterday. You know, they escaped the ninth inning with Scott Alexander, who they didn't even really want to pitch yesterday. They were hoping to give him the day off because he's pitched, if you just look at his workload, it's been pretty incredible. I think it's like 9 of the last 13 days or, you know, 10 of 15 or something like that. But they didn't really have – he and Kelvin Herrera were the only really available arms in the ninth inning. And so, yeah, it is a good question. And then he was asked, you know, they're even thinner today going into Eric Skoglund's start, which, considering his track record after his great debut against the Tigers, leaves you a little bit uneasy. You know, obviously they did claim Mike Morin, my guy from Shawnee Mission South, by the way, off waivers, and he will be in uniform today. At least Ned Yost said that yesterday. So. And he hasn't pitched in a while, so there's an arm. I don't know if he's going to be available, but I guess he would be if they really needed it. And then we'll see what else they can kind of patch together. But they don't necessarily. I'm not sure that they have a long man. Trevor Cahill's pitched a bunch. Mike Minor threw, you know, 2+ innings. So we'll see what they have. But it is not a good spot. With going into a start with when you have to throw Skoglund out there in place of Ian Kennedy.
Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star, Royals beat writer, is our guest. And Rustin, you mentioned this latest waiver claim. Maybe it could pan out the way the Royals' last waiver claim has. Sam Gavilio, who started yesterday, nothing great, but in his two starts, he's gone 5 innings in each and given up a total of 3 runs in 10 innings. And the Royals, that it, you know, he got the win yesterday. I think we talked about this before. His numbers weren't awful with Seattle, and the Royals claim him off waivers, and they've been able to squeeze 2 starts out of him that were decent. That's just imagine what they would have been doing if they hadn't claimed him off waivers. That's been a nice little surprise here as they chase this wild card spot.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think he made 11 starts with the Mariners, and if you look at his first. Half of those starts, he was pretty serviceable, you know, and had some decent outings. He said he got out of his mechanics a little bit in his last part, and then was sent down, and then wasn't really. He might have been called up one more time, but didn't really get another chance in the Mariners rotation. So he spent most of the year at Triple-A Tacoma. I mean, I think he is sort of is what he is. I was laughing at your. I was actually listening yesterday. He's sort of a five and dive guy.
Right.
I'm not sure you're wanting more out of him than 5 innings. And I think he's also kind of a Jeremy Guthrie type in that you're always kind of relying on a little bit of luck in terms of the batted balls, just hoping that it goes to the right people. But he does have enough command and enough idea and enough good pitches to where he can give you 5 innings. And give you solid 5 innings on, you know, any given day. So I think he's been, I mean, they've just needed anybody to give them something over the last month, and he's been kind of just what they needed the last 2 times through the rotation.
So you described Mike Morin as your guy, fellow Shawnee Mission South Raiders. I'm assuming you didn't cross over with him at all while you were in school.
No, I think he's 4 years younger than I was. I believe that's right. I knew some mutual family friends that kids that played with him in high school. But I followed his career pretty closely because he had sort of an interesting career in high school where he was not heavily recruited, and he was a good high school pitcher. But he was set to go to junior college, and then the summer before that he would have left for college, he was on playing with Kevin Seitzer's group,
like
at McIntyre. Yeah, and was was playing with a summer team with that group and was sort of ID'd by North Carolina as a guy that they would want if they had a bunch of guys that got drafted and signed elsewhere, because they thought they were going to lose some guys in their recruiting class. And so anyway, he landed up landing at North Carolina and had a great college career. And the Royals, actually, I think they took him in the 40th round almost.
Yeah.
I don't have this I'm going off memory because I think I wrote a story about this like 7 or 8 years ago, but I think Kevin Seitzer might have given a pretty strong recommendation to the Royals that they should take this kid, if nothing else, as sort of a nod to, you know, a local. And so, anyway, yeah, he went to North Carolina, had a good college career as a reliever, as a closer, and then was taken by the Angels in sort of a late-round situation, but was one of those college guys that developed pretty quickly and got to the big leagues in a couple years. And then after his rookie season, he just hasn't really been able to match up those numbers that he put up in 2014, and has been, you know, in and out of their bullpen. But obviously is experienced and has had success before.
All right, Rustin, as we've discussed a couple of times, the Royals are desperate for pitching, desperate for arms. Will either Danny Duffy or Joaquin Soria be able to help before the season is over?
Yeah, I mean, well, so Soria, well, I think, was supposed to be activated on Monday, but then he had some family issues. His daughter was sick with appendicitis, but that was actually compounded by the fact that I think his wife is set to give birth to their third child on Thursday. So he was, I think he'll be back this weekend. At least Ned Yost was indicated that earlier this week, once all that is cleared up, but seems like he's more or less ready to go. And Danny Duffy, I think the Royals haven't said this, but I expect him to start this weekend in Cleveland, whether that's Saturday or Sunday, or we'll see when they slot him in. But, you know, he threw a two-inning or three-inning simulated game on Monday, only threw 46 pitches, so I was thinking, you know, okay, they're going to have him go another, maybe another side session simulated game type of deal to kind of stretch him out. But the Royals Ned Yost seems like that they're not going to really do that, and that they're just going to have him on a pitch count when he gets back into a big league game, that they're sort of running out of time. They want to get him back pitching. So I think the idea is that to slot him into the rotation this weekend in Cleveland, have him go, you know, 60, 65 pitches. And then I think once he's back in the rotation, the thought would be that Ian Kennedy could come back and he would start back in his normal spot. But then from then on, they would basically go with a 6-man rotation with, you know, Gavilio staying in there. And then you have Hamill and Vargas, the one pitcher, I guess I'm not thinking of right now. Kennedy and Duffy and all those guys.
Is Mike Moustakas going to break this home run record?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's going to run into a mistake changeup like he has all season and hit one out eventually. But, man, I mean, I think it's the knee. I don't know what – you know, this is one of those things where you kind of feel like you're not doing your job as a beat reporter to kind of get to the bottom of what the knee injury is. But on the other hand – organizations can be just kind of batting down the hatches, or that's not the right metaphor, but they can kind of buckle down and not give you information on what's really going on. And, you know, he had the situation in Detroit where he was hit in the hip by Bruce Rondon, which caused some draining in his knee, and then that caused some soreness. But he had that issue for about 2 weeks, which sort of bled into this one, but no pun intended, but like the Royals, they had nothing to do with it. That this was, you know, when he was playing against the Rockies, you know, the best way they described it was that when he was running to first base, he sort of popped a tendon in his knee, which caused some soreness. But they also suggested that it was not, you know, there was no structural damage. There was nothing going on. So I don't know what the end game is in terms of like how serious this is going to be in the off season. You know, is he playing on something that, you know, some guys wouldn't play on, you know, because he can't damage it anymore. I don't know that that's the case. But it has lingered for, I think that was, he originally injured it on August 23rd. So now you're pushing over 3 weeks, and then he re-injured it, I guess that was in Cleveland the other day. Maybe it was Minnesota. I can, they always, or Detroit, or one of those Midwestern cities where they play games sometimes. he re-injured it. And then, so yeah, I don't know. He's obviously in pain. He can't move around at third base as much. He runs the can't run the bases. I think it affects him a little bit in terms of when he's striding and trying to plan off that right foot when he's batting. I do think he's going to break the record, but you know, you can't look at what he's done over the last 2 to 3 weeks, compare that to what he did for the first 3.5 months of the season, and say, you know, that it's not affecting him in some sort of significant way, because it seems like it's affecting a lot of things. You know, he had those two errant throws the other night, and the Royals said, hey, it doesn't affect his throwing. And it's probably, yeah, that's probably right. I mean, he probably can throw a baseball over to the first base, you know, without the total use of his right knee. But it did seem like he was sort of favoring it, and it was a little tentative on it, and that it did, you know, if he was 100% healthy, maybe those throws would be, you know, a little bit better. But, hey, some of that speculation, because, again, the Royals tend to be tight-lipped on injuries and don't always, you know, give the total information kind of early on in the process.
Rustin, thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you.
That is Rustin Dodd from the Kansas City Star. Always good to have Rustin on the show talking Royals baseball and music. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.